Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Friday, October 7th. Today, reporter Kevin Simpson talks to Drew Litton about his career as an award-winning cartoonist. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Today, we take you back to October 7th, 1863, when prominent youths, including Urey of the Tabuachi and Calero of the Yamparica, signed a treaty in Conejos County. The treaty intended to prevent conflict before it started by renouncing Ute claims to Colorado territory east of the Continental Divide. Governor John Evans attended the event, as did Colonel John M. Chivington, the commander of Colorado's armed forces, and Lieutenant Colonel Samuel F. Tappan, in charge of nearby Fort Garland. But the lack of attendance by most Ute bands limited the treaty's effect. And 5 years later, a more comprehensive treaty formalized the 1863 deal and heralded the beginning of the end of Ute autonomy in Colorado. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun and the Center for American Politics invite you to a live debate at the University of Denver. Come hear from candidates vying for the state treasurer seat and the secretary of state seat. Visit coloradosun.com/events for in-person and virtual options. Space is limited, registration is required. Next, our feature story.
Hello, Colorado. We're here today with Drew Litton, the longtime cartoonist for the Rocky Mountain News and a variety of publications, including, I'm happy to say, the Colorado Sun. Drew's work appears in the Sun every week, and even more often whenever the Colorado Avalanche is in the Stanley Cup Finals. He gives our readers a unique take on the state's sports landscape, but most assuredly does not stick to sports, and we're all thankful for that. And I've got to say that I have worked with a lot of tremendously talented colleagues over the years, but Drew is the only one whose work literally hangs on my wall. So with that, welcome, Drew.
Hey, Kevin. It's great to be here. Great to be a part of the Colorado Sun.
So let's talk a little history here. Going back to the very early 80s when you came to Denver to fill a job that really very few people in the country were doing on a regular basis as sports cartoonist. What was it like to step into that job, not only the job itself, but also an unfamiliar sports market, and suddenly you have to create something several times a week out of whole cloth?
You know, it was September of 1982 when I drove into Denver. So I'm celebrating 40 years of being a sports cartoonist. And I can remember I did not interview in Denver. I interviewed in El Paso. The sports editor flew to me because I was in the middle of an assignment. And I remember that first day driving into Denver and getting to the tech center. And I looked at the tech center and realized, okay, that is not downtown. What have I gotten myself into? And I had never been to Denver before. So, you know, I got settled in and I still have this mantra that goes through my head sometimes. And it goes, Broncos, Buffs, Nuggets. Because those were the only three topics I had when I moved to Denver. Because you only had, you know, yeah, you had the Denver Bears at the time, and then they moved into being the Zephyrs. And, you know, and I think the Grizzlies were here, or maybe the Colorado Flames for a while. I don't remember specifically. But it was pretty frightening at first because, you know, I had never been to an NFL game even at that point. In fact, I remember going to the first game at Mile High Stadium and being in the press box. And the game was starting, and the press box started vibrating because of the people stomping their feet up above us. And I thought, well, this is great. This is my first NFL football game, and it's going to be my last NFL football game. Because I thought we were all going to die. So, you know, that first couple of years, I was incredibly green. That first fall, I'm going, okay, this is going to be fun. You know, we'll do the best with it. I was doing five cartoons a week. And then about, I don't remember how many weeks it was, but the NFL went on strike that year. And so it was like, I didn't even have, you know, the NFL and that to play with. So it was very challenging. And I was very, very green. And the drawings were rough. The ideas were probably rougher because I was just trying to get a sense of, you know, what to do with it.
Well, obviously you found your voice, if you can call it a voice in the cartooning business. But so many of your sports cartoons quickly became iconic. And I wonder, when you look back to the early stage of your career, what would you say was maybe the one that sort of first put you on the map in Colorado?
I think that the first one and the biggest one has always been and will always be it was in December of 1984, and Broncos had a kicker named Rich Carlos. And Rich was in a game situation where there was just a few seconds left on the clock and the Broncos were behind. They tried him out and he kicks the ball into the right upright and it's no good, bounces away, end of game. The very next game, the Broncos are in the same situation and Carlos comes out for a game-winning field goal and he kicks the ball into the left upright. So I drew a cartoon that looked like a fork that Rich was having to look at, and that's what I drew. And I knew that I had hit the mark when I went that Tuesday morning it published. I had to go to the bank, and the bank teller that I usually went to wouldn't talk to me. She goes, "You're going to have to go to the teller down there." Apparently she had a huge crush, as so many young ladies did at the time, on Rich Carlos, and she was somewhat offended that I put him in that position. So that was the one that kind of made the mark. And then later it was John Elway looking in the window at Joe Sakic, and Sakic had won his first Stanley Cup.
And I got to say, that is the one that hangs on my wall. That is my all-time favorite. So this was back in 96, the first Stanley Cup. This is before John Elway had won anything. He had not won a Super Bowl. He lost a couple, I think, at that point. Joe Sakic comes to town. He wins his Stanley Cup. So tell us, describe the cartoon for us.
The way it came about was really interesting because I was talking to a coworker and we were just talking about the whole Stanley Cup run and how exciting it was. And he said, "You know, I wonder what John Elway's thinking about now." And I went, "Oh, yeah, that's a good cartoon." So I went and I sketched up the one cartoon with it. It shows Joe Sakic. He's in bed, and on his dresser drawer, he has the Stanley Cup. And you see in the background, though, that John Elway is outside, peering in his window, rather definitely coveting the cup, if you will, because he hadn't won a Super Bowl. And it was no words, which are always the best ones. And I think that it just resonated with people. It was one of the few cartoons, Kevin, that I drew that I had in mind a good week before I used it. That never happens. It's almost always like today for tomorrow or 2 hours from now, you know, I've got to get a cartoon done. So to have one that was kind of sitting there and I just kept hoping they were going to win the cup. And then when they did, obviously that came along and it was a lot of fun and it resonated with people. It was one of those ones that people liked. So.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what did your bank teller have to say about that one? Or did you get other feedback on that one?
Well, through the years, I've got tons of feedback on it. People do love it. It's one of their favorites. I get that. They mentioned that cartoon in the John Elway and the Rich Carlos cartoon. So those are the two that they talk about the most. But then there are other ones that they talk about. And, you know, I had one guy call me. Here's an interesting one. I had a guy call me one morning. And he goes, "You don't know me, but today I'm celebrating a year of sobriety from cocaine and alcohol abuse. And your cartoon was the impetus to go and get help for my addiction." And I was just like, you know, speechless, right? And it was a cartoon that I had done about Pelle Lindbergh, who was a goalie for the Philadelphia Flyers, who had been involved in substance abuse and a car accident that killed him. And I did from the thrill of victory to the agony of defeat, with the thrill of victory, him celebrating with champagne. And the agony of defeat was actually his grave. And, I knew it was going to hit hard. But to have that one guy, you know, I got a lot of grief over that cartoon. People called me and people wrote letters. They were offended. But he that one phone call was worth it to me. So you never know what's going to resonate with readers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the artistic side of this. Your art is so distinctive. Your characters, The way you draw is so distinctive that there's no mistaking a Drew Litton cartoon. You almost don't need to put your signature on it. How did you develop this style? And I wonder, does it have a name or a genre or a type? How would you describe it?
I think it's just basically a cartoon style. Like so many people of my era, we all grew up on Mad Magazine. So I think that my stuff was definitely influenced by Mad Magazine. I was a huge Charlie Schulz fan from Peanuts. I like the simplicity of that style. I like the ease of line and just the sparseness of it a little bit more. But I was also influenced by great cartoonists like Jeff McNally, who did Shoe and was an editorial cartoonist. Pat Oliphant, who had once been at the Denver Post. I was influenced by him. I was influenced by Jim Borgman, who was a Cincinnati Inquirer, who now does a comic strip called Zits. So there were a lot of influences, Kevin, but one of the things I made sure of was that I didn't take and emulate one guy. I picked up bits and pieces from a little bit of everybody. And I think that the Malcolm Gladwell concept of 10,000 hours to make yourself, you know, viable is really true. I think that you have to have enough time to be able to, you know, solidify your style and to get comfortable in your own skin. So I think, I mean, it's much like, you know, the Beatles would have never been the Beatles without the almost 10,000 hours they spent in Hamburg, Germany, playing 8-hour sets. So I think that there's some truth in that.
So over the years of doing sports, obviously, the games, the events that define sports are part of what you do, but also the people. And you've done so many sports stars over the decades. You mentioned Elway and Sakic. I wonder what have been some of the most challenging for you to capture artistically, and how do you approach creating a cartoon version of a popular figure?
I am not a natural-born caricaturist. There are some guys who can draw caricatures that are just so perfect right out of the bat. Their stuff is just really amazing. I'm thinking of a guy like named Tom Richmond, who used to draw, still draws, I guess, for Mad Magazine. Jack Davis was another one. Mort Drucker was another one. All Mad Magazine guys. Great caricatures. Caricature for me has always been a challenge. And so it takes a while for me to kind of hone in on the features that you want to accentuate. And that's what you do. You take, you know, if you see someone who's got a big nose, then you draw the big nose. And it does take time to kind of nail down a caricature, even with Elway. And I think one of the things that I felt good about, and I wasn't consciously thinking it, but when I was beginning to do the John Elway caricature, I never thought of it as a caricature. It just kind of came out as a character. It's kind of a combination of Garfield the cat and Bugs Bunny, basically. Those are the two kind of features. His eyes were always half closed, which I think really was because he had to listen to Dan Reeves all the time. And, you know, the teeth were, I tell people now, it's, you know, his teeth more really kind of like Elvis Presley with the little upper lip. But, you know, the teeth kind of were accentuated and people seemed to enjoy it. I think everybody enjoyed it except for him. I don't think he was too thrilled about it. I still don't think he's too thrilled about it. So
there's a new guy in town, the new Broncos quarterback, Russell Wilson, who after he signed a long-term contract, you may be dealing with him for quite a while here. Where are you and have you figured him out artistically yet?
Well, I'm still kind of, again, in that honing kind of place where there's no one that has been as iconic caricature or a character as John Elway. Maybe Dan Reeves, mostly because I used to draw Dan Reeves about 2 inches tall. He was like a mouse in a maze that was labeled offense, and not even he could figure a way out of it. So that's kind of what I did with Reeves. But those two guys kind of became characters. So I think it's going to take just a little while for me to get that kind of a rendition of Russell Wilson, but I've been working on it, and I think I've got a couple of caricatures that, you know, I think have worked so far. But it'll take some time, just like he will take some time, as long as they don't sit him on the bench on 4th and 5.
Absolutely. So stick to sports is an often used complaint, usually from someone who doesn't agree with a certain viewpoint. And while, you know, you definitely cut your teeth in sports here, you eventually turned your attention to the world at large. And I'm wondering, what prompted you to do that? And did it require some adjustment on your part, or was it pretty much the same as doing sports?
For so many years, I kind of stayed out of politics, not because I didn't find them compelling, but sports is my niche, and that's kind of where I made my mark. So I felt like I kind of needed to stay in bounds of that a little bit. And the other part of getting to be a political cartoonist is obviously you take sides one way or the other. And I felt like I didn't want to alienate a lot of people. But when Donald Trump got elected, everything changed for me, and particularly when he began to criticize some of the female members of Congress in ways that were just cruel, and the whole thing of putting kids in cages at the border. I felt like as a person, I couldn't just sit back with the tools I had and not call out what I think is a horrendous human being, not just a president. So anyway, to make a long story short, the quickest way that I'll block you or unfriend you is if you say, stick to sports, because I do have other interests besides sports, and I am an American, and I believe I have the right and the voice to be able to express my opinions, particularly when I see someone who is so dangerous to our democracy. And I think I would have been remiss and regretful had I not began to use my talent and my tools to be able to skewer what I think is a threat to democracy.
Well, Drew Litton does not stick to sports, definitely, and you can see his cartoons every week in the Colorado Sun, sometimes sports, sometimes not. They're always compelling and thought-provoking. And Drew, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Wow, it's been an absolute blast, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me on here. Thank you so much for having me be a part of the Colorado Sun. It's an honor and a privilege, and I love being a part of it. This has been a blast. Thank you.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. President Joe Biden will designate Camp Hale near Leadville as a national monument next week during a visit to Colorado in what appears to be aimed at giving Senator Michael Bennett a big boost in his re-election bid. Camp Hale is where 10th Mountain Division soldiers trained before heading to battle in World War II. The designation measure has passed the House several times, but Bennett has been unable to secure GOP support for the CORE Act to get it through the Senate. Camp Hale will be the first entirely new monument Biden has designated using the Antiquities Act. There is a snapback happening in outdoor retail right now. Shifting demand, overstocked retailers, and a surging focus on sustainability are setting 2022 up as the best year ever for the re-commerce industry. Wary consumers appear to be less inclined to buy high-priced and brand-new stuff, but they are turning to the swell of sellers offering barely used, deeply discounted gear gathered during the outdoor boom of the pandemic. Online peddlers in the re-commerce realm are reporting banner business. Also, more outdoor brands are getting into the business of buying back used apparel for resale. Colorado's state prison system remains understaffed by nearly 20%, so officials are drastically upping signing bonuses to $7,000 and using TikTok to help recruit. The Colorado Department of Corrections is giving retention bonuses to some current staff. Despite hosting numerous job fairs in the past 2 months, the number of vacancies hasn't changed much. As of Tuesday, there were more than 1,700 openings. The department is considered fully staffed with 8,000 workers, and the shortages have raised security concerns. The new incentives come roughly a month after the agency dropped its vaccine mandate. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Before we go, we encourage you to check out a new podcast from our friends at KUNC called The Colorado Dream. Here's a sneak peek.
The new season of The Colorado Dream explores the Black immigrant experience in Aurora. It's told through the eyes of one African woman.
I would sit on the beach and just daydream about coming to America.
And the city of Aurora, that's working to become an inclusive home for all.
In the last 20 years, we have a new face of the city.
I'm Stephanie Daniel. Join me for the Colorado Dream Newcomers Welcome. You can find the series at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.